Welcome to the Space Show, an hour of exploring the new frontiers of outer space. Here's your host, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Space Show. This is your host, Dr. David Livingston, and I would like to make a few announcements before introducing our guest, Brooke Mantilla. First of all, we'd love to have you participate in the show tonight, so you can do that by calling toll-free 1-866-687-7223. You can also send us email at dmlivings@yahoo.com or drspace@thespaceshow.com. A couple of reminders. You can listen to past space shows on our archive site anytime you wish, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just visit thespaceshow.com. And if you want to know more about the Space Show, more about your host, visit davidlivingston.com. And then just everybody remember the views and comments expressed on the Space Show by the guests, by the callers, and the listeners belong to each of you, the maker. The Space Show and its host are only the platform, and we're not responsible for others' comments or views. We're only responsible for our own views. And all of our topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for everyone's educational purposes. We have a great guest tonight, Brooke Mantilla. I've known her for years in the space advocacy world. She's extremely talented, very focused, and very dedicated space activist. She has been involved as a space activist since joining the L5 Society, which is now the National Space Society, way back in 1979. And Brooke is the president of the Golden Gate Space Frontier Society, which is the San Francisco Bay Area chapter of the National Space Society. Brooke is also very active with the Space Frontier Foundation. She has contributed to many projects and events, including the Space Enterprise Project and Return to the Moon Symposiums, as well as the annual Space Frontier Conferences. And they are among the best conferences I've attended, by the way. She has been the Foundation's Corporate Secretary for the last 3 years and has received the Space Frontier Service Award in 2002. In addition, Brooke has written a space tourism column for the Argonauts.com and a column for the Spacefaring Gazette called True Rumors. It is a great pleasure to welcome Brooke Mantilla to the show. How are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, David. How are you?
Just great, and I'm really excited that you're here. I'm glad you can be the guest tonight. Brooke, I'd like to find out from all of my guests what got them jazzed, interested, turned on, psyched up about space. What was the trigger or turning point in your life?
Well, I think it was sort of a natural evolution of interests and values that I have that sort of led me into the whole space movement. I was born, in the 60s, grew up, where there was all kinds of causes and things going on from, civil rights to the environmental movement, women's rights, and I was also a minister's daughter. So, I grew up with a real strong sense of social responsibility, being attentive to one's community and addressing the needs that we see around us in the world. And when I was about 13, I started, figuring, well, I need to decide what to do with my life. And I kind of made a list. And at the top of the list, I wanted to do something really significant to save the world. And I thought, well, maybe the best way I can do that is by being president of the United States. So that was something I was looking at for a while, but then the more I got to know about politics, I decided I really didn't want to be a career criminal or anything. So politics were out. And space, was always kind of fascinating to me because it just seemed, that there was just so much out there, and there was so much that we didn't know and so much to learn. And someone, when I was going to the College of Marin, someone recommended a lecture that was being presented there on space settlements. And, you know, I didn't really know a lot about it. I hadn't heard, you know, much about that whole line of thinking. But, you know, it sounded, you know, interesting. And it was sponsored by a group called the L5 Society. And I had never heard of them before or anything that they were about. But attending this lecture is really the pivotal point that changed my life and really set me on a direction, you know, and gave me a purpose. And, you know, and what I saw was this vision of the future that had so much hope and so much opportunity and so much potential that it just floored me. And I call it, you know, it was my burning bush. It was, you know, my calling. It's like, I want to do that. You know, and science and things like that, you know, never really appealed to me because, you know, a lot of it, I just don't get it. I just don't understand it. But this was something I could relate to because as the guy who was giving the presentation, Richard Johnson, from NASA Ames, as he was giving his presentation, he was showing some, you know, artist renderings of what a orbiting space colony might look like. And what really struck me was I saw people. I saw communities. It wasn't just about, you know, hardware and science. It was about communities and people raising families and, you know, doing things that were going to benefit the Earth. And that really struck me. It was like, oh, wow, I don't have to be a scientist. You know, I don't have to, you know, deal with all these things that I'm not interested in. I can just be myself and make that, you know, a part of my life. You know, to transform the world into this direction, just, you know, because communities are made up of all kinds of people. So, you know, if we have communities in space, that means, you know, we're going to need doctors and janitors and cooks and musicians and poets and, you know, marketing people and just all the different kinds of people that make up a community. And at the rate we're going right now, I don't know if we're really going to be able to solve all our problems on Earth unless we leave the planet, because in a lot of ways we are the problem. We've got, you know, 6 billion people and growing on the Earth right now, and you know, things are getting kind of tense.
Of course, we take ourselves with us when we leave the planet.
Well, say that again?
We take ourselves with us when we leave the planet, so... you know, it's like a person who's having a lot of problems here on Earth, career, family, personal, emotional, and they think, well, it'll be really great if I move to another city. But the problem is they're taking all of whatever their emotional, psychological stuff with them to the next city.
Well, sure.
I mean, so, yeah, the thing about space is that it has always been a cooperative and peaceful thing in space, even in the height of the Cold War. We were signing treaties to get along in space. We weren't fighting. So you're right. There is very much something about space that may very well lead to solving our problems here on Earth. I couldn't agree more with you.
No, absolutely. I think, there's a lot of alternatives, you know, a lot of solutions that I see from... You know, being able to feed people, like, you know, suppose we put our energy into building, you know, these agricultural facilities in space. So instead of, you know, tearing up the natural landscape, you know, to you know, serve humanity, you know, we're taking that somewhere else and letting, you know, nature, you know, regulate itself. I think, you know, we're just tinkering with our environment too much, and I think it's at our peril. You know, we have all these, you know, incredible technological appetites. You know, we like our laptop computers and our cell phones and our webcams and SUVs and all these things. And, you know, the price we pay for that is, you know, the pollution that goes into the environment as a byproduct of creating it for us.
Brooke, hold your thought. I hear that music coming up.
Okay.
Everybody, stay right where you are. We will be back after this short break. Our guest tonight, Brooke Mantia. Hello again, everybody. This is your host of The Space Show, David Livingston. Our guest tonight is Brooke Mantia, and we're talking about why we should go into space and what some of the benefits are. Brooke, why should you or any other folks even care about space? For example, is there anything in space for you personally? What's your motivation behind all of this?
Well, I think my motivation is really the survival of the human race. Because I don't think we're going to, you know, really go that much further on this planet, just depending solely on the planet for our sustenance. We're just using up resources at just fantastic rate, and the population keeps growing. I mean, when I was born, the population has doubled since then. You know, and in another 40 years, it's going to double again. And it's like, how are we going to keep supporting all of these people? I mean, you know, we have this dependence on oil, and everyone's, you know, acting stupid over that. And it's just getting out of control. And in the meantime, you know, human beings are not the only living creatures on this planet. You know, and while we're deciding, you know, what's good for us or not, you know, that there's other living things on this planet that are suffering. And I think when the space movement first started, and this whole concept of space colonies was developed, the question, you know, that was asked was, you know, is the planet's surface the best place to support a technologically expanding civilization? And when you really look at it, it's not. And it's not that, you know, it's bad in itself, but, you know, it's just, you have to put it in the right context. And if we could take the industry on the Earth that's so polluting to the environment and put that in space, you know, that's going to make a huge difference, you know, because we'll still be able to, you know, keep our technological, you know, innovation going, and we won't be, you know, causing all these other, you know, living things on the planet to suffer. And out in space, you know, it's not going to have the same impact. I mean, it'll just get swept away in the solar wind.
Boy, can't you just see what the environmentalists are going to say to you when you say put these polluting businesses or industries in space and they'll just get swept away? How would you respond to them?
That's not how it's going to work?
Well, first of all, I don't think that they would understand how it's going to work. So we're probably talking more about a visceral reaction here. But
how many people, you know, I mean, we all put our garbage out on the street for someone to pick up and take away every week. You know, how many people, you know, throw it in their backyard and keep it there because, you know, they don't want to see the landfills keep growing?
You know, you'd be surprised. When I was selling real estate in Marin County as an active real estate broker with Prudential, I actually found houses where people did that when I went in to look them over for sale.
Yeah, and what do you think of that? It's like,
well, they never sold. I mean, they were like the worst of the worst fixers-uppers.
Right, and
wasn't,
that's what we're doing to the planet.
I mean, it was unbelievable. No, I agree with you, but I could just see Greenpeace having some kind of a space tug or space boat ready to ram, you know, the industry that's up in low Earth orbit polluting somehow. I mean, I could just see they'd never grasp what you're talking about. I mean, you would have to find a really effective way to communicate with them.
Well, hopefully we can do that, because I think getting off the planet is the most environmentally responsible thing we can do.
I think that's one of the clearest expressions of a good reason to get off the planet that I've heard on this show.
Oh, cool.
So, speaking about that, I have a question that's come in on email, and it's related. It's from Sarah in El Paso, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to say that I am not a space advocate. I don't know very much about space, but I, too, am motivated to make a difference. how can I support space when I'm not that familiar with it and not involved with its advocacy? How can I make a difference?
Well, I think there's lots of ways of doing that. I mean, as for myself, I don't have any kind of degrees. I'm not an expert at anything. I kind of like to stay that way, you know, because I don't think you need to be an expert to participate. There's lots of resources available. There's groups like the Space Frontier Foundation and the National Space Society that do a good job at, you know, educating people on you know, what's going on with space and why it's important and what they can do. You know, for example, you know, I wouldn't be able to, you know, tell one kind of rocket from another, but, you know, I can be involved with these groups and do what I'm good at. It's like everyone needs to apply themselves, you know, according to what, you know, they're best at. So, for example, you know, I've been an administrative assistant, you know, in most of my working life. And so I tend to do, you know, those kind of things with these space groups. You know, and there's really simple things you can do, you know, as a lifestyle, like, you know, recycling and, you know, my husband thinks I'm overreacting, but, you know, it's like I'll have a fit if I see a aluminum can or a bottle in the trash can. Like, recycle, you know, because it's really, you know, sort of a ingrained thing in me now that, you know, every little thing that we do, you know, affects our environment. And you know, are we living responsibly like that? You know, it's like every action we take, you know, defines what the future is going to look like. And instead of just letting that happen, you know, claim your own power for being able to make a difference.
You know, let me suggest some other ways that in addition for Sarah, because clearly she knows the Internet because she's sending me email and she's listening to the show on the Internet. So, Sarah, you could just do a search for space organizations or space advocacy groups and see what's in your area and participate, join. But another thing you can do, and I'm still jazzed about this, I talked to Brooke about it before the show, is that the space shuttle was flying over the San Francisco area tonight, and as many times as I've seen it, I am still jazzed about it, just like a kid in the candy shop. I called my son in college down in Southern California and gave him the L.A. schedule, which was about the same as San Francisco. I called my other son who was doing a homework project. He's in high school. I reached him on his cell phone and said, stop what you're doing, run outside, you'll see the shuttle in a few minutes. I called the nursing home in San Rafael where my mom is and told all the nurses to go outside and look at the shuttle. I mean, I'm telling you, I was jazzed. And as much as I've seen it, many times as I've seen it, here it comes at 6:24 p.m. I mean, it is really a turn-on. And when you see things that we're paying for that are part of the policies that we've all contributed to and you see it working, and you know who's on board because it's in the news all the time. For example, on this shuttle flight, there's the first Israeli astronaut. And as I was saying to Brooke before the show started, he made a comment today that's all over the press. And he said, you know, he's been flying over the Middle East for the first week. And he can't help but notice how peaceful and beautiful the Middle East is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like he's there with the bombers and all the destruction and all the terrorism and all the threats of war. He's seeing it for what it truly is. And he notices how beautiful and peaceful it is. That's how you can start to get involved. And you don't have to be an expert. You just have to bring your heart and your good common sense and your passion and your gut reactions and emotions to the table, and the rest will take care of itself.
Absolutely.
And there's room for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you were with doing things with L5, did you ever get a chance to meet Dr. O'Neill, or were you after the fact with him?
Well, actually, I didn't get to meet him personally, but I did get to see him speak and got pretty close, but never actually got to shake his hand. So,
what was his speaking like? What can you tell me? I mean, you know, I've always been fascinated. I wish I would have heard him talk or met him. I wish he could have been a guest on my show.
Well, oh, no kidding, no kidding. I mean, he is truly, truly a visionary, and the world is just, you know, needs more people like that, you know, who have the, you know, the scientific credibility, you know, and can still dream, you know, to make sense of it all. It's like, you know, we have this space station up there now, and most people, you know, are barely aware that it's there or that it has any effect on their life whatsoever. You know, when there was a day when the space station, you know, was part of a much grander plan that included, you know, establishing a base on the moon and exploring Mars, and somewhere along the way, you know, the vision was lost. And, you know, I think he did a lot to bring back, you know, the purpose of space, that it's not something that's just sort of, you know, a strictly research thing or something for, you know, it's the exclusive domain of governments, that, you know, this is something that, you know, it is the heritage of all people.
Well, and his vision is still very much alive today, and I would swear by it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we owe a lot to him for, you know, I mean, he really is, you know, the father of what is the space movement today. You know, practically every, you know, space advocacy organization that exists is there because of him.
He fired the hearts of so many people that have gone on. I mean, what an incredible multiplier effect coming from, mm-hmm. from this one man's vision. I wish I'd had the opportunity to hear him speak. I envy you for that privilege.
Yeah, I feel very privileged to have heard him.
And I
also feel, you know, very privileged to have, you know, like met, you know, men who have actually walked on the moon.
Oh, tell
you
us
know,
about
I've
that.
I've been able to meet, you know, 4 of the 12 guys.
Who have you met?
Well, there's Buzz Aldrin and John.